I'm Doug Gordon. Welcome back to Beta from Wisconsin Public Radio. If you haven't watched Otsko Okotska's HBO stand-up special, The Intruder, yet, what are you waiting for? It's one of the funniest and smartest stand-up specials I've seen over the last few years. Right up there with Shang Wang's Sweet and Juicy. In her special, Otsko gets laughs from a frightening encounter with an intruder and talking candidly about her years as an undocumented immigrant. When she first started doing stand-up, Otsko imitated her fellow comedian Tig Notaro's delivery, and things have come full circle because Tig directed The Intruder. Otsko joins us now, and if you think dealing with an intruder is scary, she says that it's nothing on the horror of dealing with a teenager.
I mean it in actually a complimentary way, because they are the future. You know, I say that jokingly as well. You know, they do heal fast. They are so confident about themselves. And when I was a teenager, I just wasn't as self-aware or seemingly confident like that. And so that's why it scares me. It intimidates me as an adult that's still figuring it out. How are you so sure of yourself? That's why I fall apart.
Yeah, and you hung out with your teenage cousin for the first time with your husband, Ryan. How did that go?
She ran the situation. It's like, it's her world. We're just living in it.
This is what happened. Okay, recently I hung out with my teenager cousin for the very first time with my husband. And I was already intimidated because she's way cooler than I ever was when I was 18. Yeah, she wears colored contacts, full price. She has numerous boyfriends. And they all know about each other. Excuse me? That's so cool, you know?
If she didn't feel like talking, me and my husband would let her be. And if she felt like talking, we were like, hurry, be interesting. she wants us to say something. Yeah. So it was just really funny because we're like, this girl is 19. You know, why? Why are we tiptoeing around her every move? And so it's not something I want to do all the time because I want to be able to be myself. But that's how that hangout went.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talk about your family raising you on mind tricks. Can you give us an example?
Sure. Yeah. Mind tricks are contradictory statements, contradictory actions that sort of make you feel like you're being gaslit. Mm-hmm. Whether it's telling you to eat, and then the next time they see you, they call you fat, to just not telling you that you're moving to the United States, which is what happened to me with my grandma. She told me it was going to be a 2-month vacation, and then we overstayed our tourist visas, and now I'm still here, like 20 years later. Little tricks like that. I think they do it to ensure that there's not as much pushback, you know, so that they can have control of the situation. It's ultimately, I think it is out of love to try to protect you, right? But it makes you tough if you grew up like that, though, I think, because contradictory statements and actions, well, I joke that that's kind of a good way to fight off scary situations, to use the exact same tactic that was used to raise you.
Mm-hmm. Which is good that you're able to do that. Your grandmother raised you. What impact did that have on you growing up?
Her raising me, I think, just gave me extra perspective as a young kid. I just saw more of the generational trauma. I was able to see it in my grandma. I was able to see how hard she worked, and then how my mom wasn't able to work because she was suffering from the mental health stuff. And so I think it emotionally made me very mature, very fast, but socially stunted me because, you know, I was hanging out with someone 50 years older than me.
Yeah, whenever we would try to make friends as a kid, I was always like telling war stories. Trying to trade food recipes. There was a 2-generation gap between me and my grandma. And it showed, you know, like when I wanted to start dating, I was like, grandma, I want to start dating. She was like, dating? I married the first boy that talked to me.
You spent 7 years living undocumented in Los Angeles. What were those 7 years like for you?
So I didn't know I was undocumented or what that meant until I was like 17. because you actually can do a lot without having papers. And I like to normalize it by saying undocumented folks, they're just Americans without papers. They're able to go to public school. They're your friends. They're your neighbors. You know, if they're able to, they work. And we all pay taxes inherently because of it. We can go to the park. We can go to the library. We can take public transportation. So I didn't quite know what that status meant, really. I couldn't vote. I couldn't drive and things like that. That required a social security number. But it did give me a sense of being an outsider. You know, it's more like the feeling, I think, and trying to not be public about that information because we didn't want to get in trouble. It definitely did affect the way I try to make friends because I was embarrassed of our living situation. You know, we lived in a garage, and so I wouldn't invite people over and stuff like that or have like birthday parties. But all in all, you know, I'm surprised at how much I was able to do, just like any other kid. But I think there was just like an underlayer of insecurity because of it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. You named your special The Intruder. What is the story behind that?
So during the pandemic, my husband and I had an intruder come to our house 3 times in the same day. And that sort of becomes the story structure of the hour of the special.
So I was scared. My husband rushes out to go confront him because we're different. My husband, he's the type of guy, you know, in a movie where you're like, no, don't go towards the scary sound. And the character does. Like, why would you go towards the thing that's going to kill you? And they do. And they die. That's my husband. Just always potentially dead. You know? I'm the type of person in a movie that's like, oh yeah, I'll just wait in the car. Yeah, in case you need backup, I'll be ready. Yeah, my phone's charged at 9%. I got the fighting style of a baby, you know, strong thighs, clear eyes, can't lose, you know. That's me. My husband rushes out. He goes, hey, what are you doing here? Which is how you're supposed to approach a bear.
On top of that, though, the way that I try to fend him off or not try to fend him off, it just says a lot about me and the things we just were talking about, which were like growing up with this underlayer of insecurity, not feeling like I belonged in various communities and being in the United States, feeling like an outsider. I oftentimes felt like an intruder myself. And on top of that, there's a literal intruder, you know, how that marries together. Yeah, I felt right that would be the title.
Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating. What I found fascinating about that is the way you return to that story about the intruder a few times. Why did you want to break up the intruder story into installments?
Well, he comes back 3 times in the same day. That's 3 acts. If you're a nerd about like story structure and things like that, it just happened to be that the intruder was a poet about the way he came to our house. And then there was this big finale of how we ultimately fought him off. All of that was just my upbringing, everything that led me to this moment of feeling threatened in my own home that I was afraid to even call my home for the longest time, because in the special, I joke that I'm just renting, so it's not really my home.
You know? Yeah, that's a great joke. Yeah, I love the intimate and innovative ways that you get the audience to participate. And I think you take it further than any other comedian I've seen. Why did you add this dimension to your comedy?
Yeah, I think that some of my favorite storytellers, stories that I've heard around like a campfire, or my immediate relatives don't really talk much or they don't like to tell stories much. But when we've had like a family friend who's really animated while telling a story, whether it's like, you wouldn't believe what happened. You know, I was at the Thanksgiving sale event at the mall and, you know, and they're acting it out and they're reaching out to you, you know, touching you maybe while they're telling the story. And to really engage, they might ask, okay, so what would you have done in this situation, right? And so you feel like, oh, I'm a part of this story with the person. And I really love that. And it's why I got into performing, is I truly, really love people. I think some comedians really hate people, and that's why they got into comedy. And that's fine. There should be all kinds of different comedians. But for me, I got into it because I love people and I love participating with people. I love the human condition. And I think for people to really feel something, for them to feel like seen and a part of your story, I think really adds to that. And I'm really good at improv too.
Yes, so, you are. Yes.
So I was like, yeah, I'm going to have a few moments where I don't know what the audience is going to say, but I'm going to open it up for them to be able to respond in whatever they want, way they want.
He grabs me by the hand. He grabs me by the hand. Do it back. So this is a long distance relationship. Our Wi-Fi is disconnected. I've frozen, so you don't know when to grab back. He grabs me by the hand. He goes, y'all were so impossible that she gotta clap for just standing.
I'm very intrigued by your description of comedy as a service industry. What exactly do you mean?
Oh, yeah. Again, it's for the people, by the people. Some comedians will use stage time as therapy, and I think you should never do that. People pay tickets to come see you. People travel to come see you. I think you should serve. And so that's what I mean by service industry. It's an art form, you know, that is very raw, but and very personal, or it could be very personal. You know, for me, because it is still a performance, I like to have workshopped it or practiced it as much as I could in my own space or in smaller spaces before a taping or, you know, a bigger performance. Maybe gone through notes with a couple of close friends first, you know, before you, I think, really deliver to the people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Your existential jokes really resonated with me, probably because I'm a lifelong existentialist. Can you share a few of your existential thoughts with us?
Oh, sure. It comes from, I think, the need to forgive yourself. I mean, I don't recommend this sort of response for everyone because, I mean, it's funny and it's true. But ultimately, you might lose friends if you think of life the way I do.
Asuka, why'd you do that? Asuka, why'd you say that? I'm always like, well, you know, none of us had a choice, did we? And I'm a firm believer in that statement. I am. Like, life, okay, all of us in here, okay, every single one of us in here, okay, being birthed is the ultimate, I thought you'd like this. situation that we were all pushed into, okay? None of us had a say, right? We all come out crying, is what I'm saying. You know why? Because it's all terrifying, right? We didn't ask for this. None of us asked for this. It was our mother's idea, right? It was her idea. She was like, here's a gift. Here's a surprise gift. You live here now.
So that's sort of my view on how we all ended up here. And so be easy on yourself because this was a surprise to us too, you know? I guess the comedy aspect of that is that when someone does give me a hard time, that is the excuse I give back. And they do crumble, but and because ultimately it's like, well, damn it. Now I can't give you a hard time for not doing the dishes.
Yeah, yeah. It just resonated so strongly with me because I often say things on my darkest days. I'll say to myself, I'll say it to my wife, I never signed off on a birth certificate. You know, and I got really frustrated. So it's just very similar to what you're saying. Yeah. Your mother has schizophrenia. And as you say, this is something that's a difficult subject to talk about in comedy. But you being the solution-based comedian that you are, you've come up with a solution.
Right? In fact, what if all mental illnesses were just named after rides at Disneyland? then we could normalize it, right? Then conversations could look like this. Yeah, just like, oh yeah, I just talked to my doctor and it's been confirmed I have Mr. Toad's Wild Ride, you know? That's fun, right? Or conversations could look like this, like, oh yeah, I just talked to my doctor and at first they thought it was just the teacups, but it turns out I have the Tower of Terror, you know? And that might sound scary, but hey, at least you might have some fond memories on that ride, right? Gynecologists could start adapting this practice too, where instead of using scary words like chlamydia or gonorrhea to diagnose you, they would just be like, oh yeah, you have what we call the haunted mansion.
And I just think that at least we'll have a good laugh about it, and it won't sound so scary to people, where people might feel embarrassed or ashamed to say they have it, or that they know somebody who has it. Or it might not sound scary to people who usually would judge, you know, mm-hmm. someone for having it.
Yeah. Yeah. These are great ideas that you've got, for sure.
Oh, and I'm so brilliant.
No, honestly. Honestly, I know you're saying that was drenched in sarcasm, but no, you really are. You are a solution-based comedian. What is next for you?
I'm currently touring with my new hour. Can you believe it? I'm out there with a whole new hour, whole new thoughts. And new jokes, and I am also going to do things in life that have been on hold, like seeing my father in Japan, which happen to be things that I also have been thinking about talking about, that I have to go live it first before I can really even start writing about it more in detail. Something I noticed is that I so don't talk about my dad that people don't think I have one. So I was like, oh, I should talk about him more. I'm sort of living life and being on tour so that I could shoot the next special. And, you know, just being the multi-hyphenate that a comedian needs to be as well. So working on a TV show.
Excellent. Looking forward to that. Otsuko Okatsuka, thank you very much for joining us. Congratulations on The Intruder. It's very funny and very original, and we're looking forward to everything else you're going to do.
Thank you for having me, Doug.
Comedian Otsuko Okatsuka is the star of the HBO stand-up special, The Intruder. You can find out more about Otsuko and her comedy at wpr.org/beta.